welcome everybody and introduce the podcast. So my name's Helen Tuffy. I'm editor of Family Tree magazine. And with me, of course, is...
Nathan Ward. Hello there.
And this week is very exciting because we have a very special guest. So our special guest is Jude Rhodes of Stories of Our Generations. And she is a fantastic Yorkshire-based genealogist who has a real interest in encouraging people to share their family stories with a very special purpose. And that is to try and kind of dispel some of the pain of people on, on a dementia health journey, to try and use family history to good effect. And that's where, like, family history can sometimes seem as though, why are we doing family history? And then when it gets to situations like yours, Jude, and the way you use family history, suddenly it's not. It's really, really important, isn't it? And makes such a quality.
Absolutely. It has a purpose, doesn't it? Other than just satisfying our own need.
I love
satisfying our own needs as well, especially if it's in Yorkshire.
Definitely.
Well, that's the main reason why we asked you on the podcast, because so Nathan's been doing Yorkshire family history for a few months now, probably nearly 2 months.
Yeah, about that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Jude has been doing it forever. So Jude, what we need is, I've been trying to help Nathan, and then we thought it'd be useful to... pick your brains and get a different perspective on it. So Nathan, do you want to say what you've been doing so far from the top? Quick recap on your whole journey from the very first step into the world of genealogy.
Right, okay. So obviously I wanted to find out if I was a Viking. So I took a DNA test. That was my only real reason for doing it. And then obviously in between waiting for that and the results, then Helen got me doing my family tree. And I've managed to treat well. My mum's got an entire box full of family tree that she did. So I'm trying not to use that, but I've used it as my base point because I want to do the research myself. And I've traced back to my great-great-grandparents, and I'm just trying to fill the gaps in on those guys to sort of get to a completionist level of, like, birth, marriage, and death, and then see where I can go from there. I'm getting very sidetracked with, like, lots of offshoots and lots of siblings, etc. And then in between all that, my DNA test will come. I've come back and it turns out I'm from Pudsey, and that's it.
I just love it. Well, I think everything you've said is just fabulous. Yeah, if you live in Yorkshire and you're from Yorkshire, you automatically start thinking, am I a Viking? And you might never speak to me again, but I looked at my latest update of what my ethnicity is. And yes, I'm very predominantly Yorkshire. Tiny bit of Lincolnshire as well. But I'm now 21% Swedish.
Go off.
And I've got a new bit, and this might really upset you, and 2% Icelandic.
That is very upsetting.
I'm really sorry. You can borrow my Viking helmet anytime.
Yeah, I've got a very small bit of Denmark, I think, on mine. So I'm going to take that. But it's called the Germanic bit.
Brilliant. Well, I didn't. I heads up, I am the worst genealogist there is on DNA. Okay? So I'm not up. My knowledge of researching using DNA is really poor. So I'll be honest to start with. However, I did start looking at where the Vikings went and where they were and all the rest of it. And so I looked at Sweden first, and they generally went towards the Faroes. But hang on to your Danish bit, Nathan, because the Danish Vikings came to the northeast of England.
Nice.
Yeah, take that one. I think that one's, I was quite surprised that mine were the northeast of England. But so I think really take that as a big one.
Okay, so I could still go out and buy that battle axe.
She can.
Yes.
The ones who really used axes and loved their axes, apparently, were the Vikings from Norway.
Right, okay.
So quite interesting to, and I have to admit, I hadn't really looked at this before, because I kind of just accepted my Viking heritage, I'm afraid. But it's really quite interesting starting reading about it. And you're absolutely right about how much went to the Germanic and those like Baltic states as well. So I think you've got some mileage there.
That's great. That's very encouraging. So how have you found all this out then? Have you just literally just been reading history books or...?
I spend my life on search engines and in books. I really do. I've got a huge amount of books, and especially on Yorkshire, so I can always share things with you, Nathan. I'm more than happy to do that. We could even meet up. You're not that far from me. And so I have a huge amount of books on Yorkshire. But do you know, nowadays, search engines, they're phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And it's funny because I teach family history at a local college and every Tuesday evening. And only last Tuesday, one of the things we were doing in the lesson was I was trying to teach the students how to search for family history and history and anything relevant. And it's taken me years to get to where I can do a reasonable search to find what I'm actually looking for, if that makes sense. Before that, it would just be Airbnbs. And, you know, whereas there is a skill to it.
Definitely. Helen had me doing some searches using the Ancestry app last week, and that just was, it was crazy. Like, there's so many search bits and so many bits to filter down into. You can just get lost in so much information.
You really can. And I think I've listened to some of the podcasts with you and Helen, and they're brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. And I think Helen's giving you the most amazing advice, you know, absolutely brilliant and so knowledgeable. And I totally agree to do it in little chunks, because you'll hear the term rabbit holes a lot in family history.
I found quite a few myself already.
Exactly. And the trouble is, you then end up down the bottom of that warren and can't get back out because you've got stuck somewhere that you don't really understand how you're with that particular potential ancestor. So I think if we kind of climb somehow back out of the warren and find it at the beginning, at that entrance, and try and find a more sensible route to how we get to the bottom. Does that make sense?
Definitely, yeah. For mine, I was trying to be really meticulous, and I was going back a generation. Like I said, trying to fill in all the blanks. Well, not all the blanks, most of the main blanks. So it was complete, and I know you can't really complete it, but that's what I was doing. And then every now and again, I'd choose one person, and then suddenly I'd be just following their trail and ending up a million miles away from where I should have been. But because the information was getting constantly presented to me, I was like, well, I need to take this, because whilst I'm here, and it was hard to stop.
Exactly. And we all do it. I still do it. We all do that. And it's, I think you, from what I can gather, you're a really organized person and have like a bit of a systemic approach. I am the most disorganized person you could meet. So when I'm going through all these, like, oh, where am I being thrown to now? I have a huge piece of paper on my table. I mean, you know, I'm quite a few decades older than you, so I'm still back to pen and paper. But I have this huge piece of paper that is like my scribbling working document. No one else would make any sense of it other than me, because I've got arrows here, arrows there, all over the place. Then different coloured pens come in because I'm getting confused. But then what I do is make a little bit of order out of that. And before I even put it on anything like Ancestry, I put it on a Word document. That's just how I work. Everybody works their own way, but you have to find the way that works for you. And so that's what works for me. I kind of have these paper scribbles, and I try to get it all on one big bit of paper, because I used to have umpteen little post-it notes all over the house that couldn't find, and then nothing made sense because I'm so disorganized. And then get it on my Word document, and on and on there I put screen grabs.
All right, cool.
And I'll put links, any links that I need. Because if I start seeing that, you know, Melanie went to such and such a school, I'll be straight on Googling about that school in 1862 or whenever. And so I'll lose my thread a little bit. But if I take that web link and put it on my Word document, I know I can then go back to it and later and continue concentrating on what I should be concentrating on. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And like, it totally goes with like sort of how I feel. Helen's like kept me on the straight and narrow. She's got me setting up a research log and then another.
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely perfect. You've got to have a research log. And I am going to tell you what some other professional genealogists would say is, when I'm working for a client, when I'm working professionally, all of a sudden this organized Jude arrives and I do everything as it should be and I have my research log. When I'm researching for my own family, it is chaos because I'm not accountable to anybody but myself. And I need to switch that up after all these decades. So you're absolutely right. So what I do then, from the scribbled big bit of paper that becomes a more ordered Word document, then I start my research log.
Yeah.
That's just the way I do it. It's not right. It's not wrong. It's just the way I do it. But and then you become truly organized.
I'm not sure I believe it. Like, I am using that research log and I am like I say, I'm trying to go straight forward, but then it's when the siblings or a second wife comes into it, I'm like, I'm not prepared for this, so I'll just write it down, I'll try and take it out of my brain. So it's on my research log and I've put hashtags and all sorts of color coding so that I know that I've not done it, but it still feels massive and it's like, oh, it's on there, but it's making my research log feel disorganized, which I know it sounds silly, but
you can have, if you have it on a spreadsheet, for instance, you can have your different tabs.
Helen's and then, one of them as well.
Oh, of course she has. Really, you know, methodical. And you cannot do your research without a research log. Helen's absolutely bang on with that. You know, very much so. But I think my top tip is keeping these web links.
Right. Cool. I'll definitely do that.
I certainly do that. I even have spreadsheets of web links.
Jude, I love the idea of your big piece of paper, because whatever age we are, you know, a screen is only so big, and so a screen inevitably involves scrolling up and down trying to find things and zooming in and out of an Excel sheet, whereas a big piece of paper is actually super handy for seeing things at a glance, and especially once you start color coding with good old-fashioned felt tips.
Yes.
Quickly see, navigate your way around. And another genealogist who's really hot on keeping paper notes for herself is Sophie Kay. And
yes,
she's such a scientific researcher, but still paper, pen, colour coding. And Nathan, because you're such an artistic person, I think you could make really beautiful mind maps of your research as you go around.
Yes.
That you could. Yeah, seriously, I think you could get something that should be really lovely on Instagram. Everyone would love to have a nose at what you're doing, because you're just inevitably do it in a way that looks appealing.
I'm not sure anybody really wants to see the chaos of my mind, to be honest.
Well, I think people would. I think,
yes,
we're all nosy, so we definitely would. And I think you'd do a really nice artistic job. You just wouldn't even be able to help yourself. It just would end up looking good. Yeah.
Linda Hammond has a fabulous book that's only been out of 2 or 3 months probably, on using mind mapping in family history. And if you're a visual person, and I tend to be, I like to see, you know, how it's, you've got your mind map, and then there's a list of all the possible resources you might use, all the records you might need to be looking at. And for me, as a visual person, that helps.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's a great idea, Helen.
It is an interesting twist as well. Like, I do like the research log and I do like the Excel document. But when I'm researching, I'm in one app, then I'm going to another app to write down what I've done. Then I'm going to another app to fill in the missing information. So there's a lot of repetition, which I guess might be good, but it's not as immediate, is it? It's like, right, I need to slow myself down, go in here and go in here and go in here. Whereas if I'm just drawing it or writing it out on a big piece of paper, it's just all present.
I buy a roll of lining paper, really cheap, wallpaper lining paper. That's what I have.
Sounds cool.
And tear a piece off for that family or that problem I've hit. It's, for me, doing it that way helps with what we call brick walls. When you get to a stumbling block, that really helps because it's immediate. You're there. Your mind is working the same time pretty much as you're putting pen to paper. And so it's immediate. You're probably a lot faster than me on a computer. But even then, when I'm typing something up on a Word document, that is taking away some of my thinking, if that makes sense.
Definitely, definitely. When we did a live research project last week, and we found out quite a bit quite quickly, but I didn't film a research login as we were going because it felt unnatural to stop and do that. And obviously Helen talked off, but you just get in that flow, don't you? So you've got to go with it. So writing it all down and then doing it later does seem like a good call.
I think I agree with you. I think writing it down is sometimes it depends. Well, we all have different feelings, don't we? Sometimes we just want to just relax and do some family history. And then I'd agree with you totally, Jude. I won't be writing it down in the research log. And then other times I'll have split screen and I'll be methodically going dun, 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 dun. The reason I've learned to do it as I go along is because I'm one of those people who's hopeless at estimating how much time I have. So I always think I'm going to have more time than I will. And then I think, oh, I'll do that at the end. And then I never do it at the end because something else happened. Mm-hmm. I'll do it later. And then before I know it, 2 weeks have gone by and I come back to it and I have no idea what I've done. So, and then I find that frustrating. So then I just, so I've learned it because I'm just the world's worst at time management. I promise I'll do things for whatever, and then it's like, well, that's just not realistic, is it? But
I think time management and researching a family just don't go hand in hand somehow, do they? Because it's like, how come it's 2 o'clock in the morning?
But I found that like I set aside an hour, and then 4 hours later I'm like, why am I still here? I wasn't expecting to get like that so quickly, but I did.
Oh, it's so addictive. Is so addictive. And you mentioned your mum and her box of tricks. Was she following what you're doing, or not?
She is. I talked to her about bits of it, but then equally I know she knows some bits that I don't yet, and I want to test my research skills. So I've been like trying to hold back from getting things from her. But randomly this week she texted me some pictures of I don't know if I want to say this, but anyway, it's a military record for this tank man that I'm looking for, and I haven't asked her for it, and I keep on saying to Helen, oh, I want to research this tank man and find out where he's from, and she just randomly sent me this war record now, so I know his battalion and all sorts, and it's like, I wanted to find that myself, but yeah, it's good to have her, so obviously I need to use while she's here.
But Nathan, that's only a clue, isn't it? Like, you never know everything. So then you can learn about the regiment. You can learn about what the regiment actually did in the war. You can learn about his comrades that he was serving with.
Yeah,
absolutely, Helen. I would be chuffed a bit because what I would know is, I now know the right man to search. Because when you go into war records, that, you know, my dad was called Charles Rhodes. You know, that's really common in Yorkshire. So that I'd take that because I'd be dead chuffed that I've got the right person. But then when you go into Ancestry and if you find that person or any other, you know, archive or database, when you find the records for that person, you will find out so much more than just what's on a piece of paper, as Helen said.
Yeah, it is. It's really exciting. Like I say, it will help me focus on that person. I just want to be able to follow that path and find that document myself. I think it'd be quite thrilling. But again, maybe I'm romanticising it.
You're not romanticising it. It is thrilling.
It most certainly is. And that was something that, like romanticizing. I think that's another thing that I often mention, because I've done what I'm going to say. I've done this myself, is where you kind of, you make assumptions on what you want it to be. So in other words, it's like an unconscious bias.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to do that. And when you look at people's trees on Ancestry, because you've clicked on a hint or whatever, you can look and think, that just doesn't make any sense. But you can see where the person might be coming from, because that's what they want it to be. So you make it make sense. And I think it's so easy to go down that route. So easy. And sometimes, you know, it's like, but it's not what I wanted.
Yeah. I think I'm already in that sort of state with, I want a war story. I'm desperate to have a war story in my family, which is, again, why I'm looking for this tank man. And watching SAS Rogue Heroes hasn't helped me at all. So I want really exciting stories, but obviously they might not be there. I'm just going to have to take what there is.
We'll have to get into Dad's army. Watch that. World War One records are your best bet, I think.
Okay.
I think, you know, there's a lot of World War One records. And I think, you know, if you did find somebody, not necessarily the person you want, but millions were, you know, there were a lot of people in the wars. And maybe just start to get used to the records, because let's suppose you're on Ancestry and you find someone where a record's come up and it's World War One. Let's just suppose. So you click on it and you see on your screen a document. You need to click on all the arrows to the going through. You maybe already know this, but a lot of people miss it. I certainly did when I very first started. So click on all those arrows. You could have up to a dozen different documents for that same person, each telling you something slightly different.
What do you mean? In the First World War service records, they're sometimes pages and pages long.
Yes.
And they'll have information about all different aspects, and not just about your ancestor's service, but maybe about children they have, because they need it all for pension records, for it to make a difference to what pension you get paid and all sorts of things. But Nathan's so much younger than us. So his ancestor he's looking for is World War II. So he's looking for a World War II tank man, and
World War II records have only really recently started coming out.
I've seen that. I mean, I'll take anything, to be honest. I did find a marriage certificate, and I not checked the dates on this, so I could be totally wrong, but it's a couple getting married and they're 21 and 24, but both of their fathers are deceased, it says on the marriage certificate. So that's kind of, well, it's sad, but it's also intriguing. Like, maybe they were in World War One. I can't remember the date range, unfortunately, but I'm holding out hope there might be a war story there.
Absolutely. I mean, if they were getting married, you know, in the 1960s, 70s, it's very possible. And if they were getting married, you know, in the 40s, 50s, it's very possible from the First War. So and this is where I always think you've got to look up a little bit of history to know dates. You know, would it be feasible that they would be of serviceable age in such and such a war, which was such and such a years?
Yeah, that's definitely one of my weaknesses. My history is rubbish, it really is. So I might need to get like a history calendar or something. I need to get a bit of context for everybody.
A while ago, you mentioned about doing a timeline as a really good way of solving brick walls. So you're putting all the information you know about somebody in literally in a chronological order, making that timeline. And then that's something that can help Nathan. You can use timelines in so many ways, can't you? So let's say you're trying to find out background context, your ancestors' lives. You can put the details you have for them. You can also put other people in, other family members. It can be really fun to timeline them next to each other or with their own column on an Excel sheet, because then you can see who overlaps who. So sometimes you get, by laying it out like that, you see really clear that maybe somebody's, all four of their grandparents had died before they were born, or some of their siblings had left home before they were born. And you get a feel for what their lived experience was actually like, rather than just seeing it as a big clump of names. You can see who's actually relevant to their lives. You know, the history dates.
Absolutely. Oh, so true. I swear by timelines. It's one of my go-tos. Maps is a go-to, because then I can visualize again where people were and what feasibilities there were. But then timelines. And then Sophie Kay does a brilliant talk about using those timelines to look at the gaps. And it's those gaps that you need to concentrate on. Your timeline is populated with information you've already gathered, but the gaps are where you haven't gathered anything. Gaps might stay forever, you know, but it might be, well, do I need to find a birth of another child? And that would give you a little bit more in that gap. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes really good sense. That's really cool. I do like the natural timelines that get created on the Ancestry app. It just, like, you throw in the marriages and then it gives you a start.
Yeah,
so-and-so was doing this at this time. And then, like, without me even realizing, it's telling me this, bringing in the children. It's saying, oh, they had children and they were born on this day. And it's really cool to see that chronology appear without me doing it. Obviously, what you're saying is a bit bigger, which would be really cool to find missing bits.
Think for your years that you're looking at, and I think Helen's already mentioned this previously, but the 1939 register is your go-to document.
Yeah, cool.
I would say so. You can get some great information off there. All right, it doesn't tell you where they were born, but you can maybe guess Pudsey.
Definitely Pudsey.
But you get an exact date of birth. Well, the one that they've given, but you get a proper date of birth. And I think the 1939 register for more, what I call more modern history, is just amazing. It's brilliant. And in there, you will find evacuees. So maybe like your grandparents, were they evacuated? My mum is 96. And she is on the 1939 register, not at home, but away as an evacuee.
Oh, wow, that's brilliant. That's really fascinating. So
it's all these different angles, isn't it? So you could look for evacuees in the family.
Yeah, that would be great. I did see an entry the other day that somebody had a lodger on one of the registers, and I didn't pay much attention, so I might have to go back to it. Didn't make a note in my research log, unfortunately. But
well, that's interesting, Nate, because my mum's not down as an evacuee on the 1939 register. She's down as a lodger.
Right. Okay, cool.
As a little girl. Yeah. And she shouldn't really be on it. It should have been redacted. But she's been on the 1939 register for years.
Can you explain, Jude, about why she should be redacted?
Yes, because, I mean, she's nearly 100, let's face it. But, you know, when the 1939 register was first digitised, Mum would have been, I don't know, for argument's sake, let's say 86. Nobody should be on there for public view until they're older than 100.
Right, okay.
And I believe this, you know, I think we've got to have a little bit of dignity and respect for our ancestors who were either very elderly or who've died. And you'll find that with some records, that what are called sensitive records, it can be a lot longer than 100 years. So, for example, my granddad was in an asylum in Wakefield for decades. He spent nearly all his life in an asylum. And when we used to visit him, you know, it's not a million years away. And so to see his full records, you can see that he was there on a census on the 1939 register, actually. But till his grandchildren, like me and my brother, until we're dead, wouldn't want everybody looking at all his notes.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, a little bit of respect, a little bit of dignity.
Exactly. So that's like a bit of a dilemma for me, because personally, I don't want everybody looking at about what happened to my granddad. But as a genealogist, it's like, for goodness sake, they need to know if there was something else.
That must make modern history then quite hard to look at in some respect, if it's all 100 years.
Modern history is tough. I always think about this, Nathan, is that people say once you get earlier than 1837, which is what we call civil registration, roughly, that's harder. I actually think the 1900s is really hard. The people you're looking at, I think it's tough.
Because you can't quite flesh out the stories, can you, really, unless you have people alive that are actually going to give you those answers.
As you get further on, you'll find other ways, you'll find other things, but that might just complicate stuff at the moment.
It's going to make my war story quite hard to find then, do you think?
I think you need to go to war museums, and there's a place in Otley, which isn't that far from you, that is amazing. I can't think of the name of it. I just cannot think of the name of it. It's near the Maypole Fisheries fish and chip shop. And they might be really, really helpful.
While you've talked, I just Googled it. Is it the Second World War Experience Centre?
In Otley?
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Helen.
Well, that sounds good. Sounds like a good day out. Fish and chips and a bit of family.
Exactly. And it's not far from you. And then you just walk to the end of the street to Weegeman's and get the best pork stuffing and gravy sandwich in the world.
Perfect day out.
But there's one thing I just wanted to mention. I know I've talked a huge amount and I'm very sorry. But when you say Pudsey, there's something that springs to mind for me. And did you mention in a previous podcast with Helen that some of your ancestors were nonconformist, in other words, not Church of England?
Some of the names came up on a nonconformist register, yeah. I've not really even considered what that meant, to be honest.
It just means that they're not part of the Church of England, so they might be Methodist, Presbyterian, something like that. Catholics were treated as nonconformist. But in Pudsey, and you might have heard of this, there's the Full Neck Moravian settlement.
Yes. I go running around there. I've actually run up to it. That's cool.
And they were nonconformists. And it's a really big settlement cluster of nonconformists in Pudsey. Of all the places in the world, it's Pudsey. I think that could be worth a little dabble. And they have got their own museum in Pudsey.
Right. Somewhere for the list then. I've run past it. I didn't even consider what it was. I just thought it was just some ancient, I don't even know what I thought it was, some sort of Druid thing.
Exactly. And that's what happens. I can remember as a child always finding it hilarious when we drove through, I think it was Harrogate, the Order of Buffaloes. And as kids, we used to be in hysterics because buffaloes doing in Yorkshire, you know? But then it starts to make sense as you delve into history. So the Moravian, it's Moravian. They were really big in Pudsey.
Right, I'll definitely go have a look then. That's cool. I like the fact that I've even been past there already, though. That's really nice. Gives me the excuse to stop now, though.
I like the idea of Nathan getting out and about as well, not just doing family history on a screen. Like, there's so much to do on screen, but it's really nice to get out. And you're always really keen to explore, Nathan, so you're going to be taking it kind of next step, actually getting out there and exploring, taking photos, asking people questions.
Definitely.
Mission, yeah.
I might start a new thing, the running genealogist, where I run to locations that my family have been. Stop.
I love it. I love it. You should definitely do that.
That is amazing. Oh, that is just superb. And then you can, I'm getting carried away now, but one of my favourite things is plotting on a map where the ancestors lived, right down to the house. You could do a run around all those places.
Yeah, good. That would be a good one.
It's a real connection then.
Yeah, that's great.
That's where my grandmother walked out of that door. Oh, wow.
Although, to be honest, I'm more interested in the fish and chips right now. That's really got me.
Dude, what other... We're getting to our kind of...
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. It's been great to hear all your ideas and things for Nathan. Any other ideas for Yorkshire-based research inspiration, like other things Nathan could do, whether it's archives or... other useful genealogists who may be able to help from anything like that?
Well, the archives, which are the great big offices that hold any available original records or copies of original records, there's a lot in West Yorkshire. But the archives... It's a bit complicated. Yorkshire is a very complex county. It's an incredibly complex county. So anyone who currently lived in... anyone who lived in the West Riding, so kind of get your head round the old ridings. That's my biggest tip for Yorkshire.
Yeah, I've seen them copying up quite a lot.
Yeah. So really get your head round, and I can help you with that if you want. Get your head round the old ridings and how they fit or don't fit into the four counties that we have now.
Right, cool.
So the records are held where the current county is. Now, luckily, Pudsey was in the West Riding and it's still in West Yorkshire. So that simplifies things. The archives for West Yorkshire, there's five of them. It's so massive. The biggest one's in Wakefield, and there's Halifax, Huddersfield, wherever, Halifax. But there's one in Morley, which is very near you. So right on that great big roundabout as you go into IKEA, it's very near there. And they will have absolutely loads of records relevant to Pudsey.
Great, I'll check that one out. And that is really close to me, so...
Very, very close, yeah. And they're so helpful, the archivists in there. But, you know... You learn as you go along. You need to plan for these visits and book the visits and know what you want to look at. But it just gives you an idea. But the very daunting of these great big archives, what I would be doing is going into your local library, having a look, see what they've got. In my nearest library is Skipton. And the Skipton Library doesn't have like a family history section at all. It's got nothing much really, but they have some documents that only they hold.
Right, so what would that be then? Is it like local history documents then, or?
Maybe we could do a different session, or Helen could do a session on using TNA Discovery to find where records are held. I don't know, just a thought. But I think local libraries are often underused. And if you've got a heritage centre near you, I'll have to have a look. They are amazing. I do a lot of work with the Keithley Local Heritage Centre. And it's phenomenal. It is an archive in itself. It is absolutely outstanding. So... I'll start having a little look if there's an equivalent. But then there's other archives, like Leeds University have a wonderful thing called the Special Collections, but they're going way more back in time. And York University has records that cover Pudsey. You know, it's very complex, but I would always help you.
Brilliant. Cool. Thank you.
Jude, every week we're pretty bossy, and well, I'm pretty bossy, and I normally set Nathan his homework for the week. So without any further guidance from you, I'd say that I'd love to see him try out two things. One is running genealogy and run somewhere and take a picture of it. I think that's great. And then the other is the big piece of paper. What do you think, Jude? Do you think any other things would be cool for Nathan to try out this week?
I think that's brilliant. I love the running genealogist. Here we go. There's a whole new bit for family tree. Fabulous. I think if the big piece of paper works for you, just to be jotting down, go for it. It just works for me massively. But what I would do from that, and you can do this online on any format, is I would continue to work laterally. So everybody's hell-bent on going backwards as far as they can. I would work laterally, filling in those siblings, which become cousins, things like that.
How do you know when to stop, though? Like, because I find that every single time I'm going to the sides and I'm like getting very interested in these siblings, but then obviously they've got parents and their parents have got parents, and it's just expands so much. I don't know when to stop and when I should just focus on getting backwards.
We all have that. I still have that, Nathan, without a doubt. I still have that. And sometimes I've just got to say, right, I'm going to put that little bit of information that I want to go back to another time on my Word document with my links, like my reminder notes, and then concentrate on the other bit.
Right. Yeah. Easy said than done, but I'll try.
I find that if I just work on a database, say like Ancestry, I get in a tizzy because I go down all these other lines and forget what I was actually meant to be looking at. So that's why I have to have my big piece of paper and my Word document for the links.
Yeah, I can relate to that totally.
Me too. Jude, thank you so much. Thanks so much for coming along and sharing so many good ideas. And Nathan, you're having loads of good ideas by yourself. You're not going to need us anymore soon. And then, it's been really, really fun. If anybody wants to catch up with Jude, then her website is storiesofourgenerations.co.uk, and it's Jude Rhodes. And you can find out more about all the work she does in genealogy and local history fields. Until next time. So thank you then, Nathan and Jude.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Jude. That was really helpful.
Thank you.